Hey, this is Stephen Tobolowsky, and you're listening to Days Gone By on GBB.
Welcome back to Days Gone By, and time for my chat with actor and director Stephen Tobolowsky, who's staging Japanese Death Poem in L.A. Stephen, you there?
I'm right here.
Great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. Let's get right to the play, then. How's that going? How's Japanese Death Poem doing?
Oh, it's fantastic. I could tell you a little bit about the genesis, how I came in contact with Japanese Death Poem.
Sure.
Because a lot of people in New York may have seen me in Mornings at 7 when I was there on Broadway a couple years ago.
That was, by the way, a wonderful revival. It was a lovely piece.
Thank you so much. And Dan, I had directed Danny's, one of his earlier plays, Norman, at Theater 40, and it was an enormous success. Audiences loved it. We even had repeat business, which is what you don't usually get in theater. You get it in movies sometimes, but rarely do people come to see a play more than once. But they came to see Norman more than once.
Wow.
And when I've always been a fan of Danny's writing. Danny's writing kind of creates a perfect storm of entertainment and content. Not only are the plays emotionally true, they're scientifically interesting because of Danny's scientific background, but they're also funny, and that's a real rarity. A lot of times when people have a lot of emotional content in their plays, there's no entertainment value. So I was doing Mornings at 7, and Danny gave me a copy of his new play, Japanese Death Poem, which, in spite of the title, is also a comedy. In a true sense of the word, not only is it funny, but at the end of the play, a la classic comedy, your soul feels elevated.
Wow.
It is something. I started reading this play, and I got to admit, when I first got a play called Japanese Death Poem, one of the last things I wanted to do was read it while I was doing a comedy at night. But I picked it up reluctantly. I started reading it, and it was funny. And I was going, oh, my goodness. Danny didn't warn me that it was a comedy. So I'm reading it, and it's very funny. And I remember I got halfway through the play, and I called my wife in Los Angeles. And I said, honey, I'm reading Danny's new play, and I think it could be really great. I'm not sure, though. I'm not to the end. I'm only halfway through, but it could be really great.
Uh-huh.
She said, well, call me and let me know how it's going. So I called her about three-quarters the way through. I said, okay, this play is quite seriously good. It better have a good ending or I'm going to be so mad because this play is so good. It got to the end, and I was bawling.
Oh.
I was in tears. It was so moving. It was so powerful. It was so eloquent. I threw that play on the floor. I called up Danny right away, and I said, it's brilliant, 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 brilliant. We got to do it, got to do it, got to do it. Now, of course, that was only, what, like 2 years ago.
Now, that's actually a relatively short process these days, but yeah.
It is always difficult to get things going. Theater 40, that had such a big hit with Danny's first play, was reluctant at first to do Japanese Death Poem because they were afraid the title would scare people away.
Well, I was telling in my interview with Danny, I mentioned the whole thing that one of my professors at NYU, when I was taking writing there, was Tad Mazel, who had wrote a lot for television in the 1950s, and he had won the Pulitzer Prize for a play called All the Way Home, which was an adaptation of A Death in the Family.
Right.
And that was one of the things. The producers would not, in the remotest way, keep the title Death in the Family because they were so scared of the word death. And, you know, going on a marquee, they figured, that's it. There's no way. And, of course, if the critics don't love the play, then you're stuck with all the puns they're going to make on the title, too.
Oh, my goodness. I never even thought of that.
But Death of a Salesman notwithstanding, you would figure that kind of broke the curse.
Death of a Salesman not only is a very serious play, but even involves suicide.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty grisly, the subject matter. you wouldn't expect, and of course, so is All the Way Home.
Right.
It's pretty grisly, too. But Japanese Death Poem is amazing in a lot of different ways. But of course, what we did when we did a reading at the New Play Festival in Dallas, Texas, at a Kitchen Dog Theater, which is one of the best theaters in Dallas, with an exemplary cast. I mean, just beautiful actors. That I added at the beginning, I directed it in a very kind of stylistic Japanese way, very,
mm-hmm.
I guess you would say, I guess modern theater goers would identify if I said a Brechtian fashion, very presentational. That I begin with someone almost narrating the play saying, Japanese Death Poem, a comedy by D.T. Arcieri.
Hmm.
And the audience immediately started laughing, which was great.
Well, that even goes back to the old the story about the Sondheim musical Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. When they opened with Love is in the Air, you know, the reaction was like, oh, that's all right. And when they changed the opening number to Comedy Tonight, it became a smash.
I
literally
never
just
heard that story.
Pulling the audience in, yeah.
Totally. What a great story. That is exactly the point. You bring him in immediately to understand this is the framework of the world we're going to be in. We're going to be very presentational. We're going to have a lot of structure because what I told Danny and what I think we're using in the advertisement is this play is about sex, lies, and poetry.
Hmm.
And poetry is enormously structured in a way, as are human relationships. I mean, human beings think that we're creatures of change, but we're not. We're creatures of habit.
Oh, totally.
And that's the whole idea behind monogamy. That's the whole idea behind a marriage, whether a Jewish wedding where you step on the glass or where you say those words for better or for worse. They have age-old implications. There's tradition, which is also true with a poetry teacher in Japanese Death Poem kind of reciting, you know, various poems throughout the play. An interesting facet of the play.
Mm-hmm.
For the play to even work, The Nathan, who is the teacher, the poetry teacher in the play, the character, has to instruct the audience through the course of the play the essence of Japanese poetry, the style, and what a Japanese death poem is. Because I assume pretty much the audience doesn't understand a lot about haiku.
Right.
And the ending is so powerful because the audience has been instructed as to what Japanese poetry is, which is amazing.
Let me ask, did you direct the stage reading at Kitchen Dog, or you just went to
see? Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. Now, having done that, what did you learn from doing that? What elements are you taking from that in this one, and what did you learn to change, or sort of, is it as stylized or less stylized now that you're doing the full production of it in L.A.?
I think it taught me that the more stylized, the better, and it made me even put more stage direction into the play.
Hmm.
We found that as a theatrical device, you know, you would read the play and it says, Jenny, that's the wife's name in the play, Jenny is dressed in pink, talking on her pink telephone in her pink kitchen. Well, I found that it worked having a kind of symbolic kitchen, not having a real kitchen there at all, and having this narrating character hold up a piece of wood that's just painted pink behind Jenny's head, and just holds it up and says, Jenny is in her pink kitchen, and then he removes it, the scene goes on, the kitchen isn't really pink, but as an audience member, I still saw pink. I saw her sitting in a pink chair on a pink telephone, without having to have a pink chair or pink telephone.
Well, that's theater. I mean, technically, even it's a cool idea to have that piece of wood, but even without the piece of wood, the audience should be able to go there if the script is telling them so, if it's powerful enough.
And the stylized element of the color, if you remove color from the set, which is kind of what we did in Texas, then a little pink goes a long way. If you remove color, if you don't have a box set of like a kitchen and a doctor's office, but instead you just have a roller chair like you have in a doctor's office and an examining table, and that's it. And then you move that roller chair all over the stage, and it can become a different room. One chair can become the professor's office at school. It can become part of a psychiatrist's office. So it taught me less is more with this play. You want to have an empty stage, and you want to do it with symbolic set pieces and color. Little bits of color and as few little pieces as possible, and let the audience use their imagination. And it becomes really wonderful that way.
Well, you've been directing plays for how long now? I mean, when did you start going from the acting into the other side of it?
Well, I always have directed plays from when I was in college even. I directed the premiere of the Miss Firecracker contest with Holly Hunter in New York.
Oh.
I directed the Lucky World premiere of The Lucky Spot in New York at the Manhattan Theater Club.
That's another Beth Henley play.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And out here in Los Angeles, I usually have time to direct maybe one play a year because the film and TV schedule is usually too busy. But it was more difficult to act in plays because that takes longer. But directing, I can act in a TV show or a movie and direct at the same time, and then I'm not required to be at the theater every night when it's being performed.
That's right. Once it opens, it's pretty much relatively frozen, and you can kind of walk away and just come and look at it now and then to make sure they haven't strayed too far from the initial conception.
I consider my job as a director to make sure all of us in the cast understand the story we're telling. And if you understand the story you're telling, there is less opportunity for the actors to stray. It's like, you know the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears,
mm-hmm.
and I do too. And we could probably, you and I, alternate aspects of that story almost interchangeably right now, and we would end up with the baby bear. You know, we would know exactly where that story was going. Of course, when you're dealing with a world premiere, like we are with Japanese Death Poem, you don't have ages of having had the story told to find common ground. So it's my job as a director to read the script, look at it, work with the playwright so that we're both on the same page and we pass that torch to the actors and they know on a nightly basis what that common ground is and convey that to the audience.
I have to ask, do you have any experiences as a director that were sublime and also like your worst and nightmarish experience of directing?
I had many sublime moments as a director, one of which I directed a James Berry play, What Every Woman Knows, with my wife Anne, who's one of the finest actresses I've ever met.
Anne Tobolowsky, does she use her?
Anne Hearn is her name, and she was on Evening Shade with Burt Reynolds. She's in The Accused with Jodie Foster. She did ER. She's been in a lot of stuff, but mm-hmm. she's also won many of theater awards here in Los Angeles for playing like Elizabeth Proctor in The Crucible. She won a Best Actress Award. She's really one of the finest actresses I've ever encountered. And I've always wanted to do this play for her. And it's a magnificent play. And we did it at Theater 40. And it was amazing to have people sitting in the theater wiping tears from their face at intermission, before intermission, and looking over at me going, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And I go, wait till you see Act Two. And you know, just to see an audience moved so much by a play. And also, another great experience, I did Our Town,
which
a lot of people hate to do because it's done in so many high schools. But I said, if you do Our Town right, with real actors and not with kids, it's a devastatingly powerful play. And I did it, and again, I had my wife Ann playing Mrs. Gibbs. And I remember opening night, the Variety reviewer was sitting next to me, and they were kind of jiving me kind of before, so are you nervous? And I go, no, I'm not nervous at all. And they go, why not? I go, because I've seen the play. I mean, we've rehearsed it. It's magnificent. It's a wonderful performance. You know, you're going to have a great time. I mean, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. At the end of the first act, the Variety performer looked at me, pupils in full dilation, just going, this is stunning. And
wow.
I go, thank you very much. And they go, and who is that woman playing Mrs. Gibbs? I go, it is my wife. Now, in terms of nightmarish experience, my nightmare directing experience was I was called in to help a production that was having difficulty. It was at the Beverly Hills Playhouse, and it was a musical. And they asked me to come in and see if I could lend any directorial skills to pulling this show off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat down and watched the entire show, and they came up and said, do you have any recommendations? And I said, yes. The first recommendation, cut all the songs.
Yeah.
Not make it a musical. I said, I think, and they said, well, we already have the poster printed up. I said, well, it's good. Just put a red X through musical, brand new musical. Just cut. And I said, it'll be funny. I said, the play is funny, but the music doesn't work. And it seems that it's forever getting through each song, so let's just do the play as the play, and it'll be plenty long anyway, as it is. You know, we don't have to sit here for 3 hours and listen to a bunch of bad songs. So that was a pretty bad experience, and it's the composer and the librettist were a little disturbed, but the show turned out to be fairly successful after we cut out the music.
So they really took your advice and did it. Sometimes
yes, they
can't,
did.
You know, turn back and make that kind of decision. Now, as far as acting stuff, do you have a favorite performance or a favorite piece that you were in?
Well, certainly Mornings at 7 in New York was a wonderful time I had. And also I got to act with Julie Haggerty, which was wonderful. She played my girlfriend in that. And that's really where I met Julie, and that's where I thought she would be perfect for Japanese Death Poem. In terms of films, it's hard to beat Groundhog's Day. It's a, you know, I think time will show that'll be a classic film. Certainly a lovely performance by Bill, wonderful direction.
By Harold Ramis.
Oh, think, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just everything about it is a delightful comedy. It's really, really wonderful. So that's right. If there's certainly Memento is a terrific film, too. It was a great experience. And currently now Deadwood is a phenomenal experience to work on the show. Difficult, but phenomenal.
How much of a commitment does that require to be on a series like that?
Oh, Deadwood requires more commitment than most shows because they never have a script until the last second, and they never have a schedule. So, you know, I get calls at midnight or at 6:30 in the morning saying, like, we're going to need you in an hour. We're emailing you lines.
Are they allowed to do that union-wise? I mean, just call you an hour? No, I thought it was like a 9-to-5 thing with an equity cut. You know, that kind of stuff.
No, I guess they are allowed to do that. And the results are pretty phenomenal. I mean, I feel like I'm in one of the greatest rep companies there is. With Ian McShane and Powers Booth. I mean, just the actors on that show, Tim Oliphant, you go down the line and they're just amazingly good.
Well, I want to thank you very, very much, Stephen Tobolowsky, for calling in. And again, I want to remind also people to see Japanese Death Poem if they happen to be on the West Coast. It's happening at Theater 40. In L.A. from April 16th to May, what's the closing date on that?
I think it closes at the end of May, even though there's already talk of extending it. I think we close the last weekend of May.
Thank you so much for
Thank
talking
you.
To us in the neighborhood.
A pleasure.